This is Maggie from the Positude Shows. Tonight's show will be a Positude podcast. And I have as my guest Peter Kling, who really doesn't need an introduction, but one of the things that he's most well noted for is his book, Letters to Earth. So without further ado, he's got so much information to share and our time is very limited. I'd like to bring Peter right on. Peter, are you there with us this evening?
Absolutely, Maggie. Absolutely. And it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. So we'll be doing a series of shows on UFOs, and I know that you have so much to share on the topic. I'm pretty much going to let you take it in whatever direction you'd like to take it, and I may interject a question here or there. If we could start off as to your opinions or what are aliens and where they're from, that would be wonderful.
Sure. The aliens and where they're from. They're certainly not from Earth, and they're certainly not from the third dimension. And we actually do not live in the third dimension. We live in the physical dimensions, but they're actually dimensions 8, 9, and 10. Study a little string theory, and you'll understand and comprehend maybe how that works. But in order for our physical dimensions to be here, according to the mathematics, and it's hard to bend mathematics, especially when there's four different teams coming up with the same answers, in order for us to be here in the physical realm, there needs to be seven other spatial planes in order to support life here. And we can look at this from a whole bunch of esoterical views, but to look at it from science, and it's kind of hard to dispute the evidences that we find at hand. When we go back and look at the scriptures, and I'll say this right off, religion is the worst thing that ever happened to the Bible or the scriptures. But when we look at the scriptures, what we find is that there's something that's much more closely related to Star Wars than anything that you're ever going to hear coming off of a church pulpit. It starts, essentially, it's a book of 6,000 years involvement, of alien involvement in human affairs. And where the whole problem starts, and we go right back to Genesis, within the first three chapters, we have the whole answer. There's actually two different narratives, and what we're being fed now is the Anunnaki narrative. And I'll expound on that a little bit more, but let's look at the scriptural narrative first, or the narrative which is in Genesis. What we find is that we have Earth, which is created to sustain human life forms. And what the record says is that God said, let us create man in our image, plural, our image, okay? And so it goes on to say, and so he created the male and female, and he gave them, and he told them, have in subjection the fish of the sea, the flying creatures of the heavens, and the wild creatures upon the earth. And all trees bearing fruit may serve for you to eat, and may all seed, vegetation producing seed, may it produce, and may it also serve for you as food. And so he blessed them. Now, here's the thing. When we look at the fossil record, and we can start back before the Precambrian era, where we've got anywhere between 1 to 3 billion years where nothing existed on this earth except for single cell life, cyanobacteria, and in some cases extremophiles, depending on whose theories you want to listen to. But there are examples of extremophiles today, so that's not so far off the beaten path. You go to places, Mammoth Hot Springs, Yellowstone National Park there. There's extremophiles all over the place, bacteria that live in almost boiling water. What? and that's what discolors those springs, those hot springs. And so wherever water existed within the entire universe, it was supercharged to produce life. It just took a while for that life to get anywhere. But we get to the Cambrian period. And what do we find at the Cambrian period is something that scientists can't give us a good answer because they don't know the right answer. Because they won't admit to the right answer. But what we have in the Cambrian period is such an explosion of life on this planet, such a variety. And interestingly enough, it's almost all underwater. So many different life forms. And now here we are. You got to figure out how long ago this took, but it may not have taken as long as we think, not the half billion years that we're being told. But if you look at the high Andes Mountains and on the side of Mount Everest, somewhere around 17,000 feet up, you're going to find fossils of 6-foot clams and oysters that didn't die. They were covered over with some sort of mud and then upheaved into these mountains. because they're all sealed shut. You know, when a shellfish dies, the shell opens up, right? And that's why we find all these seashells along. And we don't find the whole thing. If the whole thing's closed, it's still alive. And so some of us will eat them. But anyway. But we find these things hoisted way above where the oceans are now. How did they get there? Well, obviously they had to be under the water once upon a time, but I digress. So we have the Cambrian period, and we have such a vast variety of life that scientists can't explain how it all got here without having to go down a trail of genetic engineering. And genetic engineering fits in perfectly. Because when you get to Genesis, the second chapter, we have a clear record of genetic engineering, where God says it's not good for the man to be alone. We need to make a helper for him. So what happens? He causes a sleep to come over the man. Got the anesthetist there. Opens up the flesh. Got the surgeon there. Removes a tissue, a rib sample. Brings it over to where? Genetic engineering. And they start to genetically engineer a female copy. And they bring the female before the man. And the man says, at last, this is bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. This one was taken from man. I shall call her woman. Adam knew that Eve was his genetically engineered twin sister.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's right there in black and white. Mm-hmm. Holy mystery solved there, Padre.
I love that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. When I was writing Letters to Earth, just before I was finished and sent it off to the publisher, I was going out with a very nice Catholic woman, and I explained that to her, and I said, "Tell your priest." She goes, "Okay, I will." And she said, "I just told it very simply, holy mystery solved, Father." And she was all enthusiastic, you know, she was going to do this. I never heard back from her again.
Oh, that door, Peter. I'm a Reformed Catholic myself, so.
Maybe I should count my blessings, I don't know. But you know, here we have everything right before us. It's just a matter of examining it. But it took both the scriptural knowledge that I had and the scientific knowledge that I had to put it all together. And my biblical knowledge started really before I was 5 years old, but it's actually cellular. It's written within my own DNA. I found out that the end of February, beginning of March, I forget exactly when it was, 2016, I finally found out my family history. And as it turns out, my ancestors were personal friends of Martin Luther and started the Reformation. Yeah, we picked a war with the Catholic Church, and we denounced the Catholic Church and exposed lies. And the whole thing with the Reformation was the church was extorting the people.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people remember, okay, well, yeah, they were selling indulgences, you know, pay us now, you can go to heaven, here's your free card. It's just going to cost you. But they were actually really essentially financially raping the people. You know, the poor widows all by herself trying to keep the little farm together, and the local pastor there comes and he says, "Madam, your husband's stuck in purgatory. You know, you're going to have to sell your farm in order to get him to heaven." And now this woman doesn't know any better. What's she going to do? Oh, I can't let my...
Sell her farm?
Sell the farm. And so the church takes over the land, you see, and that's how that happens. And so during the Reformation, it was actually several families that wasn't just my family, that banded together with Luther. And they actually hid him after they all denounced the Catholic Church. And they hid him while he translated the Bible from Latin into German, just in time for it to be mass produced on the Gutenberg press. And so kind of like the genie was out of the Bible, people were learning the truth. And what happened then? And it has time. We're going to do another episode on this because it applies to us today. What happened then set up the Catholic Church lost a large part of its support It was in financial ruin, basically. But the princes who converted to some other, well, left the Catholic religion, seized the church's land and turned those places into higher areas of higher education. So, you know, they would take a monastery or a church and turn it into a school or a university and start teaching the people, start educating their people. And that was actually the very beginning of the Enlightenment period, which really doesn't come for another 200 years. But we're just at the 500th year anniversary of the Reformation. This is the 500th year of the Reformation. So it's interesting. Here I, how did I get to do this? I've been at this for a very long time. And so knowing this, you have to start to ask questions like, who are the genetic engineers? And see, where the problem starts is that Earth was taken from the genetic engineers and it was given to the children of Yahweh. Because when you go to Genesis chapter 2, Adam was not genetically engineered from a lower life form. He was created directly from the elements of the ground. He was a star child. He was the son of God, the son of the creator, Yahweh, Father Yahweh. And so that's where that all starts in. Now, a lot of people are saying, oh, well, Yahweh's a bloodthirsty God. Yeah, he had the Israelites trying to wipe out the Canaanites because the Canaanites were the child-sacrificing mob that were horrendous. Archaeologists today have looked at found the remains from where they carried out these sacrifices to Molech, and they said 80% of the bones that they were bone fragments that weren't burned completely up were from newborn to 3 month old.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is now with what's come out about the church today, or actually yesterday, I guess it came out, over 100 priests have been molesting over thousands of children in Pennsylvania. Nice.
Yeah, I saw that. I actually posted it on my Facebook.
So
yeah.
Here we go. And so we're going to do a show on prophecy because there's some major ones going on now. But let's stay on topic with aliens and UFOs. You see, there's a long connection. And I'm sure that there's a lot of variations in my last name. And the reason for that was because it was changed over the years. Because for denouncing the church sent its agents after my family. And I'm sure the families of those who supported Luther. And for over 250 years, they hunted us down wherever they could. And they murdered us wherever they could find us. It's interesting. I've got one of my ancestors, believe it or not, is the only white, the only Caucasian man, the first Klings to come to the country were in the 1600s. There were two brothers escaping persecution of the church. One of the sons of one of the brothers was captured by the Seneca Indians, and he goes on to become chief of the Oneida. He's the only documented white man to ever become an American Indian chief. John Peter Klingenschmidt was his name. So, yeah.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, interesting. You start to find out about your family, and all sorts of things fall out of the woodwork. And so here we are today doing the same battle against the same powers that are still controlling this earth, which are tightly, closely related to the alien and UFO situation that's going on. And I'm going to prove I'll explain my own personal situation here. But who's been controlling the narrative up until now? You know, it's groups like MUFON. You got all these different meetings that get out, and everybody wants to know the truth. We all want to know disclosure. Disclosure is already out there. It's just that we want the government to admit something. You know, disclosure has been out there for years. We can track it back to before World War II. And the Nazis had contact with the aliens that were giving them advanced technology so they would have advanced weapons to fight the war.
Yeah, I've read about that. I agree.
Yeah, what about New Schwabenland? Whatever happened with that? They started that before World War II. Interesting. Russia and Germany have been at odds since World War II. They've really kind of hated each other. And now, let's see, out of New Schwabenland, could we have possibly had the resurrection of the Anunnaki? Oh, there's so much to go down. There's so many rabbit holes. But who controls the narrative? Who is MUFON petitioning? Who are all these people asking to come clean, tell us what's going on? The government, right?
So, absolutely.
So who controls the narrative? The government. Yeah.
Yep.
And so groups like MUFON and people that have been bought and paid for, and I'm not going to mention any names because other people just get upset with me. But I don't claim that there are any blue chickens running around the universe. Maybe on Earth, some of them, but yeah, none across the universe. There's no blue chicken people. And the Earth is definitely a sphere. It's not.
That kills me, the flat Earth theory.
Why the flat Earth? Now, this is also controlled by the CIA. It's another narrative controlled by the CIA. Do you know why? Because the Anunnaki are back.
Yes.
And Anu was the god over a flat domed Earth. Oh.
Gotcha.
Oh. So let's talk about Peter Kling's little brush with the aliens, because you want to talk about something that has shaped a life. Nothing has shaped my life like this. As I said, my biblical education started before I was 5 years old, and I had very interesting mentors. Most of them were all German people. Imagine that. the only time I really went into a church was for a wedding. I had no religion, and then I was told never get involved with religion, and never get involved with politics. And then I was being taught scriptures I was being taught history and prophecy, and then how the prophecy would apply. And then I took what I learned to the next level over the last 30, 40 years. However, you need science in order to do that. And with my own experience, a paradox formed in the life of a 9-year-old child. I had already had I was 9 years old. I had 5 years biblical knowledge already under my belt, more than most people accumulate in a lifetime. And I was a savant. I knew, I grasped this stuff really quickly. And I literally had a dream that came true. I literally had a dream that came true. It was something I dreamt about and then actually lived about a week. We lived through a week later. And when it happened, I ran home and come running up the stairs. And, Ma, I had a dream that came true. And she was washing the dinner dishes. And she said, well, that's nice, honey. It's time for you to go to bed. And I was like, what?
I love it.
Yeah. And I got sent to bed. And what happened is that door, the spiritual door, got slammed shut because she was my conduit. She was the one that made sure I was doing my studies and, that's nice, dismissed the whole thing. And I remember I was laying there in bed. I was thinking about, the prophet Samuel. He was 5 years old when he was given to the temple. I was kind of 5 years old. And he started prophesying at 8. I come on, I'm just a kid. But what happens here is that spiritual door is slammed shut. And after lamenting myself to sleep and then even lamenting it the next day because I was telling my little friends about what happened, I decided I needed to learn science. And that's when I decided I needed to become a scientist so I could understand things at the most minute level so I could get down to comprehend exactly what was going on, because I realized how valuable it was to see the future. Guess what? If you could see the future, then you can prepare for future events. And so that literally became a driving force in my life. A 9-year-old kid with a paradox. I literally grew up with the Bible in one hand and a test tube in the other. Fast forward the clock a little bit. I've just turned 18 and I'm madly in love with this gal that I met. She's my high school sweetheart. And I even like her parents. And, I'm going to marry this girl. And to her parents, I was the son they never had. And this is 1974. There was a lot on my plate at that time. Besides graduating high school, I got a letter from from my good old uncle, Uncle Sam. Congratulations there, son. You are now signed up for the U.S. military. You are in the classification of 1H. In other words, you are holding until we can get our little fingers on you, because Nixon suspended the draft, but he didn't end it. And I was number 26. Oh, my God. That back then they had the draft lottery. And they started in the eighth grade. So, every year you follow it because, you're curious. The war's running on. And my number was way back in the pack. I mean, sometimes I was up in the 300s. But mostly, the upper 200s, the year that I'm eligible, I'm number 26. No way. Eric von Daniken also wrote a book during this time period, just before this, The Chariot of the Gods. And that was a subject that I was truly interested in. because mm-hmm. I knew the story from the spiritual side, but now we got UFOs, we've got aliens, who are these people? So I was like reading everything that I could get my hands on, everything. One night it finally happened. It was somewhere toward the end of May, beginning of June, while I was going out with my madly in love with my high school sweetheart and I'm loving her mommy and daddy too. And I was woken up in the middle of the night by someone standing there saying, "Look, the prince arrives." And I pop up out of bed and I'm looking out my window and there's flashing lights outside the window. And I run to the window and I look and I'll be going to hell. This is the chariot of the gods landing. Here is this landing craft that looks like a chariot with golden horses molded right into it. And there's lights flashing underneath it, and there's like steam coming out of it. And there's this guy riding the chariot that looks like he's some sort of prince. And so I'm like, wow. Yeah, wow. And the way that it was landing was toward the other side of the house. So I ran around to look out another window. And it was gone. And I'm like, okay, come on. What just happened here? Mm-hmm. And I had no answers. I had no answers at all. And so, you know, being perplexed here again, eventually I fell asleep. And or at least I thought I fell asleep. And I was taken to an underground base, for lack of a better word. It was alien contact. There was no ship involved, though. I was taken underground. It seemed like I was in the bowels of a castle. And I was told I was going to meet the prince. And now I'm thinking, okay, prince of what? Prince of who? Which prince is this? Because there was never any explanation given. And it's like, you know, why me? You know, and although, you know, this can't be happening, all these different thoughts and feelings. But now, you know, I'm kind of like, honored about this, and so it was never really an abduction, and they were all very human looking. Everybody was dressed in monk's robes, though. It appeared to be kind of like a monk's robe, very beautiful material, but heavyweight, very silky, and they were all different pastel colors. Everybody kind of had, you know, a slightly different color, but I got to meet the prince, but I was never told who this prince was. And it was like one big social gathering, and I was being accepted and being, you know, made a friend with these people. And it even seemed like the prince's daughter liked me. she disappeared somewhere, and I went looking and then got in trouble. You know, hey, I was 18. Come on. I know the sweetheart was back on Earth somewhere, but. You know, she gave me the look, so, but I never did find her, and I did get in trouble for leaving the area that I was supposed to stay in. And so then I was assigned a guide, so he became my new friend, and he answered different questions that I would have. But I noticed that, and it wasn't just one experience, I took several trips, four or five, and it was all, you know, getting to know you. It was a recruiting effort. And I started to suspect, okay, who are these people? And because I was never hearing anything connected back to anything biblical, nothing, no reference to any prophets, no reference to anything that would have even said, aha, now there's something I could kind of see. Okay, that has something to do with scriptures. Nothing, totally void. And right after I started questioning that, shortly thereafter, I don't know, it was like the next trip, we were in this one large room, and there was about 60, 70 different individuals there. And I say individuals, like I said, they were all very human looking. They always had their hoods up, and they were male and female both, but they always had their hoods up, and I had to wear the same outfit. It was a nice piece of material, what can I say? But eventually one person gets up in front of everybody else and he says, "Can I have everyone's attention?" And so everybody's quiet. And he says, "We need someone to kill Peter Kling." And with that, my jaw dropped and my eyes popped out of my head. And I turned to my friend here and I said, "Why do they want to kill me?" And he just simply said, "Because you crossed the line." I was like, "What line?" And boom, I was back and found myself back in my own bed. Now, it's interesting. A lot of alien abductions start off in your bed and end in your bed. And I wondered, you know, all you have is a cognitive memory of this whole thing. And I wondered, was it actually, did I actually go somewhere? Is this a memory implant? What was this? But they told me flat out that they were going to kill me.
Right.
About a month later, I was in a motorcycle accident, dropped the bike doing about 60 miles an hour, had a glass jar in my pocket, in my windbreaker. Interestingly enough, I came away from that. I impacted, unscrewed the lid on the jar, and the jar never broke. How's that? Yeah. And it was just a scary moment. My high school sweetheart, shortly thereafter, she didn't want to be my sweetheart anymore, and she broke up with me. I was like, okay, maybe I shouldn't have paid any attention to I don't know, you know, but and then shortly after that, it was about another month after that, I bought a used car. I was waiting for it to be finished all summer long. It was a Triumph GT6, nice little sports car.
Yep,
nice little sports car. I was waiting for it. 22 hours after I had it, I was on my way over to Knoxville, Tennessee to see a friend of mine, lost the left front tire and rolled it down a riverbank. Totaled it out. They found the tire on the other side of the river.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. And I thought, that's twice they missed me. Because I knew
right.
I knew what was going on here. There was no explanation for the things, you know, that was happening. Come on. I just buy a car 22 hours later, the front tire comes off. Please.
Right.
What's going on here? And you know, I was experiencing loss at one point after another, and I should have been depressed as hell. And I kind of was, at, you know, with the breakup of everything. But then I kind of got myself back together, you know, put myself back together, and I said, okay, they can't kill me. And I grabbed the world at 19 years old, and I started swinging it for all it was worth. I was never supposed to see 19. And that's when I started creating mayhem. Anyway, yeah, and nobody.
Peter, what do you think protected you? What, you know, just to, I don't think you've ever. I've heard these stories before on your other shows, but what do you think protected you and allowed you to live?
Yeah, I've seen my guardian angel. So if other people have, I want to fast forward the clock here, and we're going to go back, and I'll explain this to you because this is where it all comes together.
Mm-hmm.
This is, we're now in 2015, and my high school sweetheart, we've made contact on Facebook probably for about 7-8 years, and she's having the worst financial year that her and her husband have ever had, and they don't know what's going on. They can't do anything about it. She was literally a real estate agent to the astronauts during the heyday of the Kennedy of the Houston Space Center there. Well, during the shuttle days, and then after the end of the shuttle program, things kind of died out there, and everybody moved away. And so, she was still doing quite well. You know, Houston is a very popular area, and but this year was a disaster for her. Anyway, this was right under the tetrad blood moons. We had just had the Pope standing in America's holy places. That's a prophecy right there. That's a prophecy that caught me by extreme attention. Because mm-hmm. no doubt when the church declared war on my family, they also laid a curse upon us, I'm sure. But what I saw standing in America's holy places was exactly what is written in Matthew, the 24th chapter, the 14th, 15th verses. It says, when you catch sight of the disgusting thing which causes desolation, standing where it ought not, let the reader use discernment is exactly what it says in parentheses after that. Let the reader use discernment. And so I used my discernment and I saw the instrument which caused the death. And yet I didn't know this consciously yet. I didn't have the family history, but I saw the emblem, the chief false entity here, this man of lawlessness standing in America's holy places, telling America's Congress, our lawmakers, what they need to do. Remember the Pope standing before Congress? There was only one patriot in that whole group that turned around and did not follow the Pope's decree, and that was John.
He's the only one.
Yeah. He broke down into tears because he saw where America was going.
Yeah, he was the only honest guy there, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. And then came along the current president, and after 36 years of control, because every president from Ronald Reagan to Obama was controlled by the Vatican. And so the Vatican.
Absolutely in agreement.
Yep. The president, all the presidents from Reagan to both Bushes and Clinton, and now we have HRC wanting to become president, that would have put Knights of Malta back in charge of the White House and would have retained the Vatican's grip over the country. But they all got trumped. Interesting.
Literally.
they literally got trumped. I think that was great. And that was something that I foretold from the prophecies, but that's another show. You see, what also happens at the end of September, while all this is going on under the tetrad blood moons, and we see, you know, America was where church and state was supposed to be separated, and now we got the church telling America what to do. Huh. The Whore of Babylon riding the wild beast.
Yep.
And so, but what also happens at the same time is my high school sweetheart calls me up one Sunday morning, and she said, and not only is she on the phone, but it's a three-way phone. She's got her sister on the phone, who I haven't talked to since she was 12 years old. And I, you know, I, it was like, okay, I knew what she's trying to do. She's trying to fix me up with her sister, who's not, you know, who's now in her 50s. So I don't want anybody to get the wrong idea. She was 12 years old when I saw her last. But now she's in her mid-50s. And so, or early 50s, actually. And so she, my old high school sweetheart, bows out and leaves me on the phone with her sister. Okay. So, you know, we kind of catch up on lives, what's been going on for the past, you know, 35, 40 years, however long it's been. And boy, I'm hearing a life that's bizarre. Bizarre beyond words. I mean, there's things I just can't say here. Drug-fueled orgies, running through the streets naked at night. But a lifestyle like that. And where did it come from? And then reports of childhood molestation. That and she said, my parents would sit right there and my uncle would be openly molesting me, and nobody would say a word about it. Wait a minute, this is mommy and daddy, the same ones that treated me like I was the son they never had. And so, you know, I'm going on and you're not a piece of, come on, you're really a good person. You're always a nice kid when I knew, you know, but that would be your biggest complaint. Then you'd hear more bizarre stuff. And it was like, wow. And so it wasn't just in one phone call. All this came out in several phone calls, and I'm making actually progress where, you know, we're finding out what's going on here. And I get this gal to make a decision and a change in her life, and she agrees to it, and she's all, yep, I'm going to do it. And the next day I talk to her, and she goes, no, I changed my mind. Oh, I was furious because I wasted a month, and I knew exactly what I was dealing with there, because there's only one force that has that much, that can control a life form, and that's an archon. Think Dracula, a shape-shifting entity that lives on the soul of humans, drinking their blood, sucking them dry. That's what we're dealing with an archon. Where did it come from? Anyway, I was so frustrated and I was so angry after that conversation. I needed a day to cool down, and I called up her older sister, my ex-high school sweetheart, and I started to tell her, I said, we've got a problem. You've got a problem. And I told her the story, and she says, it's the box. I said, what box? She said, my dad had a box, and there's all Masonic symbols carved on it and all religious symbols carved on it. She said, when I had the box, I had the same things going on in my life. And when I got divorced and moved, I gave the box to her. It was, you ever see the movie Jumanji?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the box. And I said, well, that box has got an archon attached to it. And I told her the severity of the situation, and she grasped what was going on. And I said, and I started making, you know, questioning her about, then all the dirt came out. Then the closet started to be opened. Mommy was a high-ranking member of the Eastern Star. Daddy was a Freemason. They controlled archons and demons, but they didn't teach their daughters how to do it, and so their daughters were stuck with the dangerous entities. And so we started to talk about this, and we started to talk about what's going on. Now, remember something? This is when I had my alien contact where they told me they were going to kill me. I was going out with this girl. I liked her parents. I loved her mother. She was a sweet woman. Oh, did I happen to mention that Mommy Dearest was 17 years older than Daddy, and Daddy was 17 when they got married? Yeah, and I also failed to mention that my high school sweetheart's younger sister, she was a twin. Her twin sister died at 2.
Her twin sister died when? I'm sorry, Peter.
At 2 years old.
Oh, my.
What happened to the twin sister?
What happened? Yeah, that's what I was just thinking. Where did she go? How did she die?
You see, the father would have been 19 at this time because my high school sweetheart was actually the daughter of a different man.
Interesting.
You see how this comes together? Now here's where it gets even more interesting. So we're talking about all this, and I said, well, look, you've got to go through all the stuff that you have from your mom and your dad. You got to go through everything in the house, anything that might be closely related to anything that you know, to do with these entities, you have to remove from your house. If they're valuable, put them in a safe deposit box or whatever. And she starts telling me, well, you know, I when we rented this house in January, it had an alarm system. And so I brought all of mom's stuff home from the safety deposit, you know, from the bank that was in the safety deposit box because it's got an alarm system. And we weren't worried about it. So why pay the extra? Yeah, all the jewelry, all of the things that have been bound with entities. Which are shape-shifting. And so this was on a Saturday. The following Sunday, about 12 o'clock in the afternoon, 1 o'clock, somewhere in there, I get a text message with a picture on it. It's a swelled ankle. It's the left ankle. Swelled up like a balloon. Nice. All red, irritated. What'd you do? I'll tell you about this later. But, you know, okay. So I get a call later on that evening. She said, last night about which somewhere in the middle of the morning, I wake up and something's beating me and I'm in a fight with something I can't see and I'm just punching and punching away at it. And before it finally leaves, it grabbed me by the foot and twisted my ankle.
Yep.
An entity she could not see. Now, granted, it was dark, but you still got to see something that you're fighting. She could feel it. She was hitting it. She could feel it.
Right.
And she was in a fight with it. Yeah. The next day, I talked to her the following Monday. She was in a very somber mood, hobbling around. And she couldn't talk to her husband about this because he just wouldn't understand. Oh, it's all in your mind. He must have sprained, you know, whatever. He just wouldn't understand it. But she was going through all of the stuff that she had. And we talked a little bit about that and the different connections. And I found out more dirt more Masonic and religious connections, and it's like it never ends, does it? And so I left her to her little chore there and hadn't heard from her in about a week or so, and I sent her a text message. Can't talk now. It's raining buyers and sellers. Is that like cats and dogs with buyers and sellers? So that's real estate talk for like you're more busy than one on paper hanger. So... I talked to her. Sunday's her off day, so she calls me up the following Sunday. She goes, I can't believe how busy I am. It's like the whole year let loose all at once. I said, really? I said, when did this start? She said, I took all of mom's stuff out that Saturday, Monday, put it back in the safe deposit box. And the first call started coming in on Wednesday. I said, So when you remove the stuff that was suspect that contained these interdimensional life forms, which were ruining your and your husband's life, everything instantly turned around. Within 36 hours, you were more busy than you thought ever. And I made her think about it. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, that's now it comes full circle. Think about what if Peter Kling had become a high-ranking Freemason, became in possession of the box? What if Peter Kling knew how to control archons and demons?
Right.
What if I would have gone down that path? What if I would have been accepting to the recruitment of these alien life forms that were my friends? You can meet the prince. We're going to kill you because you suspect us. And it's 16 times I should have been dead, was dead once and got sent back. And yep, other people have seen my guardian angel and so have I. Very incredible thing. This was great. But it was actually the second most incredible thing. I was in a coma in Westchester County Hospital. And when you're in a coma, your brain is in theta. I'm sorry, delta. Let's get my brain waves right. Delta. You're not dead, but you're not able to go anywhere, do anything. You're pretty much unconscious. Deep sleep. Your brain is cycling between above zero, but less than 4 cycles per second. And while I'm in this state, this entity comes to me. And all it does is say, come with me. It was a handsome-looking male-looking entity. And the next thing I know, I'm looking down at the birth of my youngest child in real time. Interesting. After the child was born, I was put back in my body. And everything was in living color. It was beautiful. And I say that because in my near-death experience, when I did die, everything was in black and white. And my soul was connected to the great white light, my consciousness, my life force, and I was being drawn in. But here I am back in my body in the hospital, and I remember feeling happy and content that the baby was born. And obviously there wasn't anything wrong with it, otherwise I would have been shown that, but no, I wasn't shown that. And I can't tell you how long after that it was, but I did regain consciousness. My mother was there standing above me. And the first words out of my mouth were, "Ma, you got to make a phone call. The baby was born." And that woman had the most confused look on her face that I'd ever seen in my life. And then it changed to a very reassuring look. And she said, okay. And she went off and I lost consciousness again. And next time I opened my eyes, she was standing above me again some hours later. And she said, congratulations, you have a son. Wow, that was cool.
Wow.
Yeah, I thought so. The near-death experience wasn't as cool. But what it did show me something interesting, because dying is never fun. And I knew I was in trouble. I couldn't move. I can only move my eyes, and I'm surrounded by nurses and doctors, and they think I'm fine. They're wheeling me down a hospital corridor, and I can't get any of their attention. And next thing I know, I'm out of my body watching them wheel me down a hospital corridor, and I'm being physically pulled away. Now, when I say physically, I could feel a force. And my consciousness was enveloped in like smoke or vapor. I'm thinking ectoplasm maybe. But at the time I was under extreme duress because I had just started a whole new chapter in my life. I had just got married, had the child. And I had started a new job, but you know that was going to be put on hold here for a while. And I could, all that was, you know, was going through my mind. I said, this can't be happening. I just started all this new chapter in my life. And now I'm dying. I'm dead. And it's like, I guess I don't have any choice. And I'm just, you know, being pulled further and further and further away from my body. And then when I finally gave up the anxiety of it all, I turned and focused on where I was going. And whatever I was made of, whatever energy field form this was like I was in a tractor beam and I was being pulled right into that great white light. And as I'm approaching it, it stops. That force stops. And I was like, what happened? Electric go out, you know, we're on the escalator here and it stopped. Not quite, but that force stopped and it reversed and it pushed me back. It physically pushed me away. And it put me back into my body. And I had no real physical form other than a long stream of energy that was being pulled into this white light. I was in like a vapor cloud. That was it. The most incredible thing was after 10-10-10, when I predicted 3-13-13 and 4-14-14 would be earth-shattering events,
right,
earth-changing events. It was shortly thereafter. I said the dates that we have to watch out for were 3/13/13 and 4/14/14. And it was one of those, hey, Rocky, watch me pull a rabbit out of my hat. And I couldn't find anything for 3/13/13, but 4/14/14 started the Tetrad Blood Moons. There's a whole series of videos on there. They even wrote books about it. Jonathan Kahn wrote 2 books on the Harbinger. You're welcome, Jonathan. You never thanked me for the information. Regardless, couldn't find anything on 3/13/13. But it was shortly thereafter I started a whole string of prophecy hunting, and I finally came up with the results, and I said, okay, I've got it. And I was getting ready to publish my results, and I was warned not to. It was actually my own mother said, I wouldn't do that if I were you. And I said, yeah, I know, Ma, you're not me, but I've got to do it. The very next day, I'm bringing my son home from college on a road that I've traveled many, many, many times before, even before I went to school. And on our way back, I just set the cruise control for 63 miles an hour, so I know exactly how fast I was going. And out of the wood line jumps a huge buck. He was gorgeous, but I knew he wasn't going to clear the car. And there wasn't enough time to react to this, and I hit the brakes. And while this deer is in midair, a blue orb appears out of nowhere, blows up like a balloon, and absorbs the impact between the deer and the car. If you look at the pictures I took of the car, there's a round depression in the glass. And that deer urinated down the driver's side, and its antlers bent the rain gutter on the passenger's side. It went across the entire windshield, and I hit it at 60 miles an hour. That deer should have come through the windshield, decapitated both my son and myself, and had gone out the back. Because the second story in the news the following Monday was exactly that. Well, not exactly that. A family was traveling at 45 miles an hour, hit a doe, weighed about 90 pounds. It went through the front windshield and out the back windshield and put all 3 of them in the hospital in critical condition. And I hit something more than almost 3 times that size at a 50% faster speed. Now, interestingly enough, we all survived it, including the deer. My son went back to check on the deer. I was looking at the front of the car trying to figure out what I just saw. What was that blue orb? Where did it come from? It was just there for less than a second. It was like, boom, boom, and gone. It showed up, it expanded, and absorbed the impact, and it was gone. I mean, how much time do you have? How fast are you covering at 60 miles an hour? And you know, it's almost instantaneous that this was in and out. Thank goodness. Talk about timing. And the car was still drivable. And I drove it down to a safe place and called up my other son and said, hey, I told him what it is. He said, you're not going to believe this one. And I said, come on over. This is where we are. I'll follow you over to the body shop. We'll drop the car off and worry about it tomorrow. And I sat there for the next 45 minutes going over and over and over in my mind, what did I just see? And yeah, I know what I saw. So we are not alone on this planet. We were created to be the gods of this planet. And the problem started, as I mentioned, as we started this off earlier, the problem started when Earth was taken from the genetic engineers and given to the children of Yahweh. And so we have 2 narratives. We have that, so you can believe, and if you're listening to this broadcast, I'm going to say you'd rather believe that you're one of God's children and that we indeed are gods, because it's a lot better than the other narrative, the one that we get from the Anunnaki, where we created you from lower life forms, and Darwin's narrative of, your ancestors swim in trees. But it goes worse. It gets worse than that, because there's actually a narrative that's written in Genesis chapter 3:15. I shall put enmity between your seed, the reptilian serpent seed, and the woman's seed, and he will strike you in the head, but you will bruise him in the heel. So we have 2 genetic strains that are on this planet. We've got the reptilians, who are bloodthirsty, cold-blooded, child-sacrificing, enterprising people who don't care about anybody else but themselves and their support system. And then we have us, the woman seed, who are waking up and gaining the power that we need in order to become successful and claim our rightly ownership of this planet. And that's where we're at now. So, yes. You see, don't believe the narrative. Don't submit to aliens. Don't submit to God wannabes. Claim your own personal power, because we are children of Yahweh.
Thank you so much, Peter. What a wonderful, wonderful conclusion. This has gone so quickly, I did not even stop for a break. We're about all out of time. If you would please be so kind as to share your radio information here with us on LNM, and also your information for your book and how anyone can get a hold of you.
Sure. If you want to reach me, best way, one, at peterkling.com. Real easy to remember. The book is Letters to Earth. The future is yours. We have a fantastic future. We've got to get over the speed bumps. But if you're one of the woman's seed, you'll have the Father there to hold you by the hand. And we'll all get there together. You know, whenever I run into a problem, I run home to Daddy. And trust me, I've run home to Daddy lots of times because I have nobody else. But I have nobody else but him to thank. The letters, because I said, Letters to Earth, the future is yours. And this future is going to change rather rapidly. We are not going to have the same planet 7 years from now as what we do now. And this cycle is going to end shortly. The cycle of this Pope will be over in 2020, 2021 at the latest. And then we're going to, guess what, get a new world order. Hang on. We're going to have to ride that one out. But don't worry. The King of Kings, Lord of Lords is coming with the armies of the heavens. Armies equal war. And Trump wants a space force. It should be interesting. So hold on. We're in for a great ride.
Peter, thank you so much for joining us. And yes, I would absolutely love to have you back for a show, at least one show specifically on prophecy.
Sure, absolutely. Oh, and oh, by the way, which reminds me, if you want to listen to us, we're on Tuesday nights, 7 o'clock on the LNM Radio Network. We are listener-supported, so please go hit the donate button.
You beat me to it. Please support the network. We are totally listener-funded, and we do this for nothing. We bring these shows to you, both live and recorded, just because we want to share our information with you. So please support LNM whenever possible. Thanks, as always, to all of our affiliates as well who broadcast with us. Thanks, everybody, for joining us, and have a good night. God bless.